Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. Lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges, because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Brother, there's far too many.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was the late, great Marvin Gaye, who we also had a little bit of a celebration of his transitioning, shall we say, out here in the nation's capital area. And we also had a chance to listen to Martin Luther King, one of his final speeches. I've been to the mountaintop, and it's been over 50 years since his assassination. And one of the interesting things, everyone, is that a lot of times when we begin to rise up against that which we call injustice, or we rise up because it's the right thing to do, it's the good thing to do, that history tends to put many of us, whether it's of this incarnation or previous ones, depends on how you look at it. But, you know, we go down in different ways, and transitioning becomes a louder voice at times than when we were here. It's still something I'm trying to process. I think about it a lot, that why is it that when I'm gone is when you talk about all the good things, and when I was here, you kept fighting and kicking and screaming with me? So I sometimes wonder if when the soul is just not distracted from all the limited ways of thinking, that it really begins to bring light to the right things, to the things that are inspirational and truly what the energy of the soul is supposed to recommend. If you've tuned into America Meditating Radio, I know that you are conscious, awakened, or definitely woke, and you're definitely looking for tools and steps and ideas and processes to move your life forward, to get out of being stuck, and to be more activated, to live a fully purposeful life. When we don't live our life of purpose, you can definitely identify the thoughts are stuck somewhere, either somewhere in the past, or stuck in comparison of others, or stuck in expectations or desires for such a far, you know, future thinking that we don't even allow ourselves to be very present. And so what happens is that we get a little bit, you know, numb. We stop thinking about what we need to do right here and right now. But that didn't happen for our next guest, because our guest today is Jim St. Germain. He is nationally recognized public speaker and policy advocate, and he has worked with former President Barack Obama on My Brother's Keepers Initiative, the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, and was appointed by President Obama to the Coordinating Council on Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. Now, last month, during Black History Month, Mr. Obama selected Jim's book, A Stone of Hope, as one of the nonfiction books that can help provide essential context about the challenges many people of color face today. Jim is a co-founder of Preparing Leaders of Tomorrow, and he's a native of Haiti and the co-author of Good Immigrant U.S. He spends most of his time working with at-risk and formerly incarcerated youths. Today we welcome Jim St. Germain to America Meditating Radio. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the kind introduction. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, what a calling you are having in this lifetime, huh?
Well, I think for some of us, we come into this world, especially when you're black and brown, you come into this world with a purpose that's already within you. And you can't really avoid it. I think that's the difference between us and a lot of other people, is that we come with that calling embedded in us.
Mm-hmm. I bet. Now, you know, a lot of us who are immigrants from other countries, I'm from Jamaica, you're from Haiti.
Right.
And when we come over to America, America's a big eye-opener. It has a lot of different facets to it, and it gives us a multitude of options. And sometimes
right.
we don't have all the experiences to see what our choices can be. And definitely if you're a black man, you know, the odds are against you. You're going to have to work 10 times, 20 times harder than somebody in a Caucasian body and, you know, has a life of privilege and ease. So
right.
you came over from Haiti at age 11.
Yes.
What were you expecting when you arrived in Brooklyn? And was it difficult for you to actually make the transition?
Well, when I was a kid in Haiti, I was in love with this movie Home Alone with Kevin.
I remember that one.
Familiar with it. So my vision of America was pretty much from that film. So I thought that the hardest job me and my siblings would have is keeping Joe Pesci out of our $2 million mansion. So that was my vision of America. It's one of beauty and of abundance and one of the white picket fence and neighbors welcoming you in and, you know, pretty much heaven on earth. As a child, that's what you were sold. And when I got here, I moved into one of the ghettos here in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
The reality was completely different from what I would, from what I expected. What was interesting, though, is literally on the same block, right across the street from us, there was the Hasidic Jewish community, which was a completely different world of its own. So trying to navigate all of that while being a child, while also trying to assimilate into this new community and avoiding the violence and not getting caught up in it and learning a new language and a new custom and culture was really challenging. And unfortunately, I did not always succeed. Moving into Crown Heights and in that community, facing all of those challenges as a child, when you expected a different world, was very, very challenging for me. And unfortunately, I failed miserably for a long time before I got back on the right path.
But in one of the videos that I had heard, because I was watching some of your videos and stuff, I loved how you said you made such an awful dealer that you got arrested early. And
right.
As a result of that, you know, that kind of helped to turn your life around. You know what I mean?
Right.
That must have been a big, big shift. You know, like here you are trying to make a living. They basically push you into the area or get you caught up in it, and you're having to learn. Like, how did that affect you?
Well, I think that for many of us growing up in certain communities, especially in the urban, downtrodden communities throughout America, unfortunately, sometimes the alternative to what we have is the juvenile justice / criminal justice system itself. There is a direct pipeline that takes you from that community and that neighborhood and those challenges and the broken schools, the under-resourced schools, the broken homes.
Just get used to it,
right? That takes you
right
to the school or prison pipeline. And
wow.
Of us who goes through that pipeline, we don't come back out. And so for me, I was really, really fortunate that as a kid, when I got caught up in the juvenile justice system, I was accepted into a program that really take care of my well-being and that really gave me a shot at life. But most importantly, it was the people that I met through my journey as I was trying to change my life and I desperately needed a vessel that came in and sort of like wrapped their arms around me. And they saw something special in me that I couldn't see in myself at the time, because it's really hard for a child to be what they can't see. And so those individuals really the ones to be credited for that transition as I was trying to learn a new way and also survive within all of that chaos.
Right. Must have been amazing. I mean, I don't know what the current stats are, but in 2014 alone, there were over 4,000 young people between the ages of 10 to 24 that were taken away from us due to mostly firearm or some kind of a form of violence. And when you think about the age group between 10 and 24 of so many leaving the planet, you know, just because of violence and ignorance, it's staggering. So
right.
Did you see a lot of, like, physical violence in your community?
Unfortunately, violence was literally in the air that we breathed as kids.
Wow. Hmm.
It was always present. And what's sad is that we didn't know that it wasn't normal. We became desensitized to the violence. It just come up a way of life. Everything
right.
had violence in it. The movies, the music we listened to, the way we acquired things as kids was through force and violence. And that is not unique to urban black and brown communities.
Sure.
Violence is an American enterprise. Violence is good for business in America, and it has always been that, which is why we have such high level of gun violence. And, you know, we're, as a developed nation, we're almost at the top for everything that is violent about the world. You know, we've been at war pretty much since this country was taken from the Native Americans. We've been at war. And why? Because war is big business. It makes money.
Mm-hmm.
And people, a lot of the times, who benefit from the violence, they don't have to live under it. They get to isolate themselves from that violence as they profit off of it. And that is no different than what happened in urban America, including a neighborhood which I grew up in. So seeing people shot, stabbed, beat up, you know, just brutalized as a kid was normal. You know, by the time I was 23 years old, I was able to count at least 17 friends that I had lost to gun violence. I mean, just think about that for a second. There are people around the world and in this country do not know one person that was shot and killed, whereas by the age of 23 for me, I had already accounted for at least 17 of my friends who were killed, not including a lot of the kids that I've worked with over the last 10 years. And I can't tell you how many times I pick up a newspaper and see one of the kids that I've invested in and love and really try to help get on the right path that were murdered. So it's a too familiar sort of like experience.
Yes,
and
yes.
A lot of the people who are in positions of power to help alleviate that violence, they don't really care about that. They don't, you know, it's not close to them.
So what do you think about the narrative that we've been seeing in the media, perhaps within this year, Kim Kardashian, Kanye West, our current number 45, where they're making a lot of change in the incarceration particular department and area. Do you feel hopeful about that, or do you think, I mean, what are your feelings when it comes on to this?
I think those individuals you've mentioned earlier are really a lot of times clueless about the issues that plague our communities. And I think a lot of what is done now, it's for show rather than for substance. You know, you bring Kim and you bring Kanye and you parade them around, and then you tell the black community that, hey, look, as long as I care about quote-unquote criminal justice reform, I deserve your vote. So there's a lot of, you know, smoke and mirrors there. But nonetheless, for the individuals themselves who benefited from the recent criminal justice reforms, I think it's a good thing. And sometimes, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
you get more from Republican presidents than you get from Democratic presidents, because what happens is that the issues are not new. These are things President Obama was fighting for, and I fought alongside of him for years. But because he was President Obama and he was a black man, some people went against those things simply for that, not for any other reason. There is this, they have this inclination to make this president look good. So now things they were saying no to for the last 8 years, now they're saying yes to. And so if that's what it takes to make some progress and to help some people, then so be it. But I think it's important to separate policy from politics, because those are very different things. And politics itself is about showboating, and it's about garnering votes. It's about boasting about what you can do for people, whereas policy is what truly transcends communities and make a difference. But most importantly, I think that if you are advocating for legal reforms, but yet are cutting educational funds, you're cutting job training programs, you're taking food away from families, you know, you're separating families, you are...
It's such a mixed bag of caboodle. It makes no sense. It's as if you're trying to show something on one side, but on the other side, you're still creating the problem that's even making that happen. So I know. It's none of this that's going on in front of our eyes right now with what's happening in our politics makes any sense. And the only thing that I'd say, Jim, that gives me hope is that something must be giving way, something's breaking through, that when a woman is about to give birth, it's not the most joyful experience. But after she actually gives birth, the joy is overwhelming. And I feel like we're at that stage in this country that there's just a lot of pain because something's giving way and something can't continue. I mean, look at your organization, and I want to talk about this. Preparing Leaderships of Tomorrow, which you co-founded. And what I'd love for folks to hear is the mission, what it stands for, and what impact would you say that it's really having right now on community, but also in the country?
Well, I think you said something earlier that's extremely important. I want to go back to a little bit is that sometimes in order to get to where we need to get to, we have to get through some trials and tribulation. And if you pay attention to American history, whenever there is seemed to be a glimpse of progress, you always have a blowback. I mean, that's happened on every level, whether it was after Jim Crow, the Civil Rights Movement. Whenever you see progress, the status quo will find a way to fight back. And so I think this presidency in many ways, unfortunately, was needed because there's a lot of things that you and I know are true, but yet under Obama, folks were able to tell you, well, come on, it's not that bad. We got a black president. Whereas now they actually have to deal with that, you know. So I think that's also really important. I think there are things now the white community is now seeing and hearing from 45 that they weren't willing to listen to 4-5 years ago. And so unfortunately, I think sometimes the good come with the bad. So, you know, to transition away from that, as it relates to Plot, Plot is a labor of love. And, you know, growing up, while I was going through my challenges, mentorship was the key thing that really set me free. Having individuals in my life, again, who nourished my potentials and invested their time and money and their love in me, I think those were the tools that really helped me get to where I am today. And so I always wanted to replicate that because I'm aware that there are a lot of young people, thousands if not millions of young people around this country in the world who simply do not have a positive figure they can go to seek advice and guidance and love. And when you have a void in a young person in the community, something has to fill that void. And unfortunately for a lot of our youngsters, was filling the void is, you know, gangs, drugs, addictions, alcoholism, whatever it is, because somehow, some way, you have to find a way to fill that gap.
Mm-hmm.
And but not reaching out to those youngsters, if we're not creating mentorship program, if we're not going to the schools, we're not going to the street corners, if we're not showing them that we genuinely care about them and love them and want to invest in their future, then someone else would take advantage of that. So with Plot, Preparing Leaders of Tomorrow, I wanted to create an alternative to all of the negative things these kids would have available to them. And so I've been very fortunate and blessed. Obviously, we're still very small and we're looking to grow. So if there's anyone out there that's interested in becoming a mentor or that's interested in donating to us or just participating in what we do in any way, a partnership, please go to plotforyouth.org. That's P-L-O-T for youth.org. And so that's the work we've been doing with Plot, but we want to do it on different levels, not just mentorship, but also we want to focus on policy. We want to focus on college and job preparation. We want to focus on tech because that's where the world is going towards. So we're looking to broaden what we do. And again, it's a labor of love, and I think that each of us have an obligation to do what we can with what we have and not wait to come and rescue us.
You know, Jim, I'm thinking next month we're launching a meditation marathon, which is a scholarship campaign. And the campaign is going to invite people all over the country to donate $1 for every minute they meditate. And we'd love to invite Plot to somehow nominate one of their youths
right.
in which they could possibly be one of the recipients of the scholarship. So I'll let you know more about that as we get to launching it. And it's going to be initiated with St. Thomas Aquinas College, which is my alumni. And I think that, you know, once we keep hearing these stories, then this is where through the engagement and opening up our portal to other avenues rather than just staying only in our lane, it can offer such an insight and opening of new opportunities to keep moving our stories forward. You know what I mean? And I want you to keep doing that because I think the way you're showing up is so truthful, so genuine, and so powerful. As we're coming to a close of our conversation, I was curious, is the work that Plots doing, is it only in New York or has it become now a national movement, or is that one of the areas that you're thinking of taking Plot?
Well, that's one of the areas we're thinking of taking Plot. Right now it's only in New York, but we're looking to expand, and that's our goal. But, you know, obviously resources are needed, and one of the things I've learned in building an organization is that sometimes you don't want to bite more than you can chew. And so that's been an experience that we've had. So we're taking it one step at a time, but it's also a bit challenging because we know that the services is needed all over, and we really want to get different places, but we want to do it the right way.
Mm. Now, do you incorporate mindfulness or meditation with some of your mentoring programs?
Yes, we definitely do. As a matter of fact, we have a friend of mine. His name is Light Watkins. He's a meditation, I don't want to use the word guru, but he's a meditation, what I would use, lover.
Instructor, offer,
so
mentor.
We're trying to partner up now to do some stuff together. We've done stuff individually in the past before, but, you know, meditation and yoga and mindfulness is something that we want to incorporate in the work that we do, because a lot of what I'm talking about here is trauma. And
mm-hmm.
heal that trauma and you don't acknowledge it, you do not isolate it and cure it, that trauma will continue from generation to generation. And so as a community, especially us, the Black people, we've been dealing with trauma from the beginning of time. And we've never take the time to deal with that trauma and take care of it because we've always been in a state of survival, in a perpetual state of survival. So I think mindfulness and meditation and yoga and other things are very important to help center us and
right.
to help heal some of our wounds.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, if you ever need any help from our side, let us know.
Yeah.
Are you a dad yet?
I am.
I'm a father
yet? Too.
What are you learning from that experience?
Oh, there was nothing like it. It's literally it's the most special thing in the world and also the most challenging to be a Black father because, you know, as a father, feel like your heart is out of your chest walking around in the world. And that itself is scary enough, but especially when you're a Black father, that is to the 10th degree. So, but, you know, my son is, he's been a great teacher, and he's been the best part of my life so far, so I'm very grateful.
Tell me what you mean by being a Black father. In your interpretation, do you think being a Caucasian or an Indian father is different, or is it that you're struggling with the values that you've brought over from Haiti, what you've learned as a young man, and now what you are morphing more into as a man period, that you're finding it challenging to see, how do I really teach him now? That's one question. Or could it just be that we're in such a different age of technology, like my age is different than yours? And so you're kind of wondering, how do I navigate teaching my child to be noble, with integrity, with values, as he's living in such a fast-paced world that doesn't necessarily show that 24/7? That's a big challenge?
Well, everything you've said is a part of the challenge. So as a parent, as a father, you have to consider all of those things, literally everything you've mentioned. And on top of that, your child is Black, meaning that they don't have the luxury to be a kid. They don't have the luxury to make mistakes because mistakes for them may cost them their lives. And the people who take their lives from them may not have to pay a consequence. So
right.
think that's the difference between being a black father and being especially a white father in America. There are things that I have to think about for my son that my white friends never have to think about for their kids. So I have to know how to be confident, how to advocate for himself, but also how to be docile in some way and not walk around in the world as if people aren't naturally afraid of him or as if people do not have this hate festering in their heart for him. So amidst all of the other things you've mentioned, technology, morals, values, love, education, all of those things are as real, but the other thing is that simply for being a young black man is a whole the experience that I think only as a black father or black mother can truly...
Can you even understand? Yeah, I agree. I agree. I have a friend of mine who, beautiful singer, opera singer, educated. She and her husband, you know, got PhDs. Her son was in college. And nobody really knows what actually happened, but somehow her son accidentally shot and killed his girlfriend. And he ended up in jail and then in prison, and he was in a particular county where the population was 98% Caucasians, you know, and just that sort of a hard-bred type. And whatever she did, it couldn't change the fact that now her beautiful black son, who had a future of becoming an engineer, was now a convict and in prison for another 20 years. And I don't think anyone can understand the pain that a mother feels when she sees the son or the child that she raised and poured energy in, what she feels maybe go to waste. And one of the thoughts I've often had, and I don't know if I'm just being woo-woo or dreaming, but I used to, you know, I find myself sitting back and thinking a lot about folks who are incarcerated, to know that they're all there, and in what way can there be a program within those walls that say, look, we're in here because of how the system is. We've got to make ourselves better while we're inside here. So, like, what plans or programs are they doing? Do you know of any that's actually taking place within those walls where inmates are saying, we're not going to come out worse than we went in? So what are we going to do? Prayer, meditation, study, picking up a skill. Have you heard of anything like that yet?
Yeah, you know, it's all it's on based off of like whatever state you're in.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a general / national organization that is doing this work because there's certain states that are very hostile towards those who are in prison. So they try everything they can do to keep programs out of the prisons. They really fight to make the experience a lot more challenging for those incarcerated. So it would be really hard to give you something for the national stage, but it's based off of individual states, I would say. Because the more progressive would have a lot more programs helping incarcerated. So I have a friend of mine, Dr. Dreisinger, who's a professor at John Jay College. She has an organization that's called the College to Prison Pipeline. And so what she does is she literally allow those who are incarcerated to take classes while they're in prison. And once they come out, they continue to go to school. And then they go back to the same prison where they were and start teaching there. Bond College also have something like that. A lot of universities have similar programs. So, for example, one of your own from D.C., James Forman Jr., who has an amazing book. It's called Locking Up Our Own. And I think any of your listeners from D.C. should definitely check this book out. Professor James Forman Jr., Locking Up Our Own. He teaches at Yale Law School. And one of the things he does is he teaches his class inside of a prison. So he literally removed his class from Yale and have the class in the prison. And all of his law students have to go to the prison in order to take the class. And then those who are incarcerated also get to participate in the class. So it's based off of individuals doing this work. It's not one national organization or guidelines for those who are incarcerated and how they are receiving help.
Wow, that's a beautiful story. Thank you for letting me know about James. I hadn't heard of him before. Jim,
amazing.
What a delight. Yeah, what a delight to have had you on air. And if you've ever got anything up that you need to get the country to know more about, please let us know so we can get you on to tell us what's going on.
Will do. I really appreciate it. And I come to D.C. often, so I really appreciate the work you guys are doing.
Yeah, when you come to D.C., let us host you at the museum, and we can invite a few kids and stuff and leaders, and let's do a really serious heart-to-heart conversation and interview at the museum.
I would love that. I'm actually going to be in D.C. next month. I'll be the keynote speaker for the Boys Town Gala. I'm also a board member of the National Juvenile Defenders Center, which is located in DuPont Circle in D.C., where national organizations focus on legal representation for kids. And we have an event on May 15, Gathering for Justice. So I would try to coordinate something with you for next month and hopefully send you an invitation to some of the things we're doing. But most importantly, I would love to have a conversation with the young people and do something with you in D.C. at the museum.
I'd love that. I'll have our producers reach out to you. Jim St. Germain, thank you so much. You're definitely a gift to the planet, so keep on doing what you're doing, and lots of blessings and good wishes.
Thank you very much. The same is true for you. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jim. Take care.
All the best. Thank you to all the listeners.
Mm-hmm. Wow, what a delight to have had this wonderful conversation with Jim St. Germain. For more information and to support his program, it's called plotforyouth.org. You kind of want to get behind. I know we're in a culture that unless you have a million likes or 10 billion people following you, that's what you get behind, because we like to get behind successful stories. But don't forget, you know, steps are also just as important. So get behind those who are taking the steps, and Jim is doing that. So go to plotforyouth.org and see what you can do to help them to move their stories forward. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jim. I know I did. And so for more information, just feel free to go onto our America Meditating Facebook or Twitter account to follow the show. I know it's going to be released soon. And be well and be safe. You know, look out for one another and just find your place under the sun where you can say, you know, I'm in. Here's how I want to offer, you know, myself to the stories here. I want to show up and be a part of the story as well. Just don't get too complacent that it no longer serves you or those around you. Remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we really are here to love each other the same. I'm going to end the show with Inclusion Revolution, because that's what we need. And it's from my Inclusion Revolution album, Inclusion Revolution Together with Love. Take care. Take this moment and settle inside yourself. Breathe in. And exhale. At this moment, I gradually allow my thoughts to settle into peace. And carefully, I observe these thoughts, and I am able to sense if I, the being of consciousness, am in harmony with myself. As a soul, the soul feels everything, whether it is aware of it or not. The heart, even though physical, signals to either soul if I'm embracing or resisting, if I'm including or excluding, if I'm loving or if I'm hateful. So behind these eyes sits the living soul. In fact, I've come to realize that we are all souls, so we are all the same. Our stories are different, but we are the same in the form of being. And that means we're all included. the soul feels uncomfortable when it excludes anyone because of an attachment to religion, race, gender, nationality, even the body. And every time I find myself excluding someone from my story, I too am excluded from another story. When we hurt, it's a sign that we're in need of a powerful lesson. So sitting in this meditation, I open myself to an unfolding, larger connection for I, the soul, am a giver and a receiver of light. And in this consciousness of light, I can embrace the community of all souls and respect every soul for the journey that they're on, inwards and upwards. We all come from the same source, the divine, a source of love, peace, purity, kindness, and truth. As I sit here in this awareness, I can see and I can feel many things I have in common with another. I can feel that my story is included with theirs and theirs with mine. In this natural awareness of inclusivity, when I think and speak and listen and see from behind my eyes, I release stereotypes and illusions from my world, because I, the soul, am energy, light, the life force. When I'm aware of this, I'm living a life of inclusivity. The more I experience the real I, the more I live from the source of love and kindness. I am a warrior of inclusivity, and I carry my weapons of love to include all and to be included by all. My journey is one from inwards and upwards, bringing with the real I a natural state of power and beauty. As a warrior of inclusivity, I'm unstoppable in my every move towards peace, unity, and love. Om Shanti.
I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes, 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.